on Walnut and Jim Gould's in downtown Champaign, April 1st to 3rd. Docha will feature great music from some of our town's finest musicians, including Stefan Milenkovich, Dmitry Kuzov, Rudolf Hawken, and my group, the Pacifica Quartet. Admission is free. For more information, visit docha.org.
It's 2:40 here on the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Jim Meadows with this look at sports. Both University of Illinois basketball teams will be at the Assembly Hall in Champaign today for postseason action. The Illini women host Marquette in round two of the women's NIT at 4 p.m. The winner of that game will go to third round action at Missouri State Thursday night. In other WNIT action, Northwestern plays at St. Bonaventure tonight. Meanwhile, the Illini men host Kent State in the second round of their NIT. That game tips at 7 p.m. Illinois beat Kent State in overtime last season at South Padre Island. The leading scorer then was Kent senior Al Fisher. But the Golden Flashes returned two top players in Chris Singletary and Tyree Evans. Kent's leading scorer and rebounder is sophomore forward Justin Green. Illini center Mike Tisdale was the MVP of the South Padre tournament.
It's a pretty close one. We went into overtime and, we pulled out the Singletary's back. I think one of their point guards left Fisher, so it's going to be a little different team. Hopefully same result. I'm glad we're still playing. Obviously it's not the NCAA tournament, but, if we win it, I feel like we accomplished something.
The winner of tonight's game faces the winner of the Dayton-Cincinnati game in the NIT quarterfinals on Wednesday. If Illinois wins, tickets for that game will be immediately available at the Assembly Hall box office. The first week of play in the 2010 NCAA men's basketball tournament is over, and what a 4 days it was. Upset upon upset took place, and three of the final 16 teams are double-digit seeds. The lowest seed remaining is number 12 Cornell. Connecticut, the top team in women's basketball, won its opening game of the women's NCAA tournament yesterday. The Huskies dropped Southern 95-39 to up their record to 34-0. More games will take place tonight in the women's tournament in Dayton, Memphis, Sacramento, and Kansas City. Still clinging to their playoff hopes, the Chicago Bulls host the Houston Rockets tonight at the United Center. The Bulls are in ninth place at the NBA East, trailing Toronto by 2.5 games. The Chicago Blackhawks are looking ahead to tomorrow night's battle for first place in the NHL Western Conference. The Phoenix Coyotes are riding a 9-game winning streak and have moved into a tie with the Blackhawks. Both teams have 97 points, but the Coyotes have played two more games. And that's a look at sports at 2:42.
I'm Diane Adams. My friends call me Dee Dee. I was born blind. My husband worked with visually impaired older folks. He would talk about the radio reader. He'd say, I ordered this radio reader for so-and-so, and so one day I said, I would really love to have one of those.
At the Illinois Radio Reader, local newspapers, books, and magazines, and periodicals are read and recorded by over 70 volunteers, and then those programs are broadcast to those visually impaired people who have our radios in their homes.
It is literally our newspaper. I feel we as visually impaired people are so privileged to have a service like this. I'm Dee Dee Adams from Decatur, and WILL is my source for the Illinois Radio Reader.
It's the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Jim Meadows filling in today for Celeste Quinn, Jason Croft, our technical director. In Afghanistan, a key militant group has taken what could be the first real step toward a negotiated settlement of the Afghan war. The group, which is separate from the Taliban, sent a top-level delegation to meet with President Hamid Karzai and other Afghan leaders in Kabul. NPR's Soraya Sarhadi Nelson has more.
A senior aide to Hamid Karzai says the Afghan president met yesterday behind closed doors with a five-member delegation sent by Hizb Islami. The militant group is headed by warlord Gulbuddin Hekmatyar and has longtime ties to al-Qaeda. It is active in northern and eastern Afghanistan and is a major problem for Afghan and Western troops here. The Karzai aide says the delegation, which includes a senior deputy to Hekmatyar, is in Kabul to present its, quote, concept for peace. The visit this week is a major coup for Karzai, die. Over the past year, the Afghan president has been rebuffed by the Taliban and other insurgent groups when he suggested they meet and discuss ways to end the war here. Militant leaders have repeatedly said they won't negotiate until all international troops leave Afghanistan. They've also rejected Afghan and Western demands that they accept the Afghan government and lay down their arms. The Karzai aide declined to outline Hizb-e Islami's new proposal for peace or what the Afghan government's response is to it. The aide says the delegation will meet with other leaders in Kabul today. There was no immediate Western reaction to the talks. For years, Hizb-e Islami militants fought alongside the Taliban against Western and Afghan forces here. But the two militant groups have been clashing in recent weeks over the control of villages in the north. Hizb-e Islami's political wing, which claims to have long ago severed ties with the militants in Hekmatyar, has also become more active in the Afghan government. Many of its members have been appointed to provincial posts in the north. More recently, the Afghan president named the Hizb-e Islami party leader to be his economy minister. A spokesman for the Hizb-e Islami militant group says the five-member delegation also plans to talk to Taliban officials somewhere in Afghanistan. Saraya Sarhadi Nelson, NPR News, Kabul.
And word from the Associated Press is that meeting has taken place, but there's no word on when it happened or what was discussed. People who want to watch marine mammals like dolphins often head to theme parks such as SeaWorld. But after a killer whale at one SeaWorld killed its trainer last month, critics are calling for a re-evaluation of keeping these huge animals captive. Anne Dornfield has the story.
In the wild, a killer whale's world sounds something like this. But most people see killer whales in an environment like this. SeaWorld calls all of its performing whales Shamu. Millions of people have visited SeaWorld over the decades to get splashed by Shamu's tail and watch trainers leap off the killer whale's noses. The trainers hug and kiss the animals between high-flying stunts. But animal rights activist Will Anderson says there's nothing healthy about the relationship between captive marine mammals and their keepers. The waters around Seattle, where he lives, are home to wild killer whales. Anderson has worked to free captive killer whales for 40 years.
The relationships they have with their trainers are nothing less than, well, what else is there to do? If you're starved for what you innately need, social bonding, you're going to settle for whatever morsel you can get.
Killer whales are actually huge dolphins, not whales. Anderson says tanks are no place for animals which roam up to 100 miles each day in their native waters.
Their bodies and their minds and their behaviors, their needs, and their huge size, they're all adapted for the wild. They are not adapted for tanks.
At SeaWorld, Julie Scardina is the animal ambassador. She handles public relations for the theme park. She says just because killer whales can roam 100 miles a day in the wild doesn't mean they often do.
The 100-mile statistic there is actually just a capability. They have the capability of roaming that far, just like humans have the capability of walking 20 miles or more per day. We provide opportunities for exercise, play, and, of course, during our shows, they get plenty of exercise.
Scardina used to train killer whales. She says the tricks show the public what the animals are capable of. And she says keeping killer whales in a more naturalistic, aquarium-like environment wouldn't serve the animals well.
I've worked with animals for over 30 years. There is no way you could convince me that it would be better just to let an animal kind of hang. That's kind of like saying it's okay to just let a person sit on the couch if they'd like. You need to provide stimulation. You want to get them up and moving.
Scardina says the goal of SeaWorld's Shamu shows is to encourage marine conservation.
Well, certainly our mission is to educate people about the oceans, to inspire them. And that's what obviously our hope is that by seeing these animals and how incredible they are, I know that's how I became inspired when I was a child.
But in a promotional video for SeaWorld's main killer whale show called Believe, SeaWorld employees suggest a different theme, more conquest than conservation.
How do we get in the water with the top predator in the ocean, you know, that kills and eats anything it wants to at any time?
I thought for a moment right there, you know what? This is really crazy what we do, but we are doing it.
The video and the Believe show itself focus on the power of the human spirit, not the marine environment. Activists like Will Anderson are calling for theme parks like SeaWorld to return killer whales to their native waters, protected by huge enclosures. There's general agreement that captive killer whales wouldn't survive if released into the open ocean. For the Environment Report, I'm Ann Dornfeld.
NPR's Renee Montaigne introduces a new series with the Kitchen Sisters that will be running on All Things Considered beginning this afternoon.
NPR begins a new series today from our friends, the Kitchen Sisters. It's about the lives and rituals of women and girls around the world. Tribeswomen in the Sahara, the traveling gypsies of Ireland, teenagers in New York City.
We would turn off all the lights, light four candles, and we have this ritual box. We would write our deepest secret or something like that, and we would put them inside the box. And we're not allowed to look at it for years and years.
The inspiration for many of these stories comes from you, the listener. The Kitchen Sisters drew on your ideas to create the NPR series Hidden Kitchens and also Lost and Found Sound. By the way, they're not actually sisters. They're independent producers, Nikki Silva and Davia Nelson, and they joined us for a bit of a preview. And Davia, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
And Nikki?
Thank you.
Your new series is called The Hidden World of Girls, Girls and the Women They Become. What is it about exactly, and how did you come up with the idea?
The series is looking into coming of age, rituals and rites of passage, secret identities, women who crossed a line, blazed a trail, changed the tide.
The other thing is over the years that Davy and I have worked together, we've done so many stories about women and girls. We've just been sort of drawn to that beat. We chronicled Vietnamese manicurists in the United States and WHER, the first all-girl radio station. It's just in the world in Memphis, Tennessee. We've just always been sort of drawn in those directions. I think seeking for models and stories about women that we look up to.
We're going to hear from a woman named Fatimata.
I am Fatimata Waletumar. I come from Mali, Tuareg of Mali.
She's part of the Tuareg tribe and a group from the Sahara Desert, the Timbuktu region called Tartit.
The life of a Tuareg is the life of nomads living in the desert in a camp, in tents.
Nous vivons sous des tentes, nous ne sommes pas dans des maisons. Et à chaque fois,
every time we move, we have to pack everything, put it on camels.
On rase la fille jusqu'à 10 ans.
One thing we noticed about the Tuareg women, they have a lot of sexual liberty and virginity is not required for marriage. Women are sort of the most in charge in the culture.
Within the Tuaregs, if someone doesn't love you anymore, you have to leave him. They say that, well, the more time you divorce, the more beautiful you are and successful.
Chez nous, les Tuaregs, les femmes fêtent les divorces.
The women throw a party when they divorce.
Grande fête plus importante que celle du mariage.
The divorce party is a bigger party than the wedding.
You both traveled all over the world for the series. Were you ever surprised, I suppose either both by how similar some girls and women are, but also maybe how different?
Yeah, this is Davia. You know, it's interesting you say that. I think about Tartit, a nomad culture there in Mali in the Sahara, and then I think of us in Dublin meeting traveler girls. Those are sort of the gypsy culture of Ireland. They used to live on the sides of the road in caravans. Now the caravan is a mobile home, and now they're parked in these sort of concrete parking lots, and they're becoming a little bit more settled. But the life of these nomadic young Irish women and the life of these Tuareg women, they're so very different, but they're not all that different, you know?
This is Nikki. This next excerpt came to us from my daughter. She kept calling me about this teacher that she has. So we went to talk with her.
October 20th, 1992. El Mosote. There are 38 skeletons. We have uncovered them with brushes, gently.
Claudia was born in Argentina, and it's really a story about she and her sister, Patricia. Patricia became a founding member of the forensic anthropology team that exhumed the bodies of the disappeared from mass graves in Argentina. And later, Claudia and Patricia went to El Salvador, and Claudia worked with that exhumation.
And she kept a journal during this excavation?
She did. She kept a journal.
I look at her and remember summers in Buenos Aires, sister quarrels, going to school in the cold mornings of the wet winter. How did we arrive to being in this exhumation together, the Bernardi sisters?
You know, this is Davia, and one of the aspects of these projects is reaching out to listeners and asking them to create these series with us. We open up the phone lines on NPR like we did with Lost and Found Sound and Hidden Kitchens. And here we are now saying, what are the hidden worlds of girls that you know, women and their stories?
Plus, when people record on your recording machine, old-fashioned as that might be, you can hear their voices and how they tell stories.
One thing we notice if you're delving into the lives of women and girls, you can't help but enter into the mysterious universe of their bodies. And one story that really struck us was the use of chicken pills in Jamaica. Chicken pills are the pills that they use to fatten up the chickens to give them bigger thighs and bigger breasts. And women got the idea that if it was doing that for the chickens, it could do that for them.
Most males, they love to see women with big bottoms. The whole idea of a Coca-Cola bottle shape.
When they're talking about a Coca bottle shape, it's heavier down on the hips.
I don't want a maga woman. That's how the men would speak. You say mega, we say maga. They're figuring that if you look maga, you look poor, and poor in the sense of you're not being taken care of.
The revered body is a really large, they say, the healthy body woman. And you'll be hearing the whole story on All Things Considered tonight.
Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, looking forward to the series myself. Thank you very much for joining us and giving us a bit of a preview.
Thank you, Renee.
Thanks, Renee. It's been a pleasure.
And as Davia just said, the Kitchen Sisters' new series, The Hidden World of Girls, begins later today on All Things Considered. You can call them with your ideas and stories at 202-408-9576. Or send them photos, videos, and diaries, and we'll tell you how to do that at npr.org.
Earth and Sky.
1 billion people on Earth, that's one person in every five, lack access to safe drinking water, according to the United Nations. Earth Sky spoke to Jacqueline Novogratz, whose organization, Acumen Fund, lends seed money to small businesses that provide clean water, health care, and energy at a low cost to the poor. The goal, Novogratz says, is to find a way to bring these essential services to low-income people, not just today, but in a way that's sustainable over time.
By investing in those intrepid entrepreneurs who are willing to see the poor not as passive recipients, but as vital customers that want to change their lives.
Acumen Fund has invested more than $40 million in companies in Pakistan, India, Kenya, and Tanzania.
And we've seen those companies not only create 24,000 jobs, but literally bring tens of millions of individuals services that they would otherwise not have access to. It's opened up an industry in rural areas that never existed.
Novogratz doesn't expect overnight success. Instead, her organization uses what she calls patient capital. That is, slow investments of a year or longer that patiently wait for that small business to take root before expecting returns. Our thanks today to The Economist, fresh thinking for the ideas economy. I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Agrigold Hybrids, Mahomet, Anderson Foundation, Toledo, AppleLearn Incorporated, Danville, and A-Plus Farms Limited, Pine Village. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Jim Meadows, filling in for Celeste Quinn. The world.